Hello, my rebels. Today, I've just got such a doozy of a story for you. Obviously, it's from the CBC. No, from a CBC expert, I should say. And what is an expert? Well, that's what today's show is about. I think you're going to get a chuckle out of this one. Before I go, though, let me invite you to get a subscription to Rebel News Plus. It's the video version of this podcast, so you can see what we're talking about, not just hear it. I want to show you also later on in the program what the police were like out there in Alberta during the carbon tax protests. And for this, I really think you need to see it, not just hear it. Please go to rebelnewsplus.com. $8 a month for the subscription. You get our content every weeknight and the satisfaction of helping Rebel News. We need the help because Trudeau doesn't give us a dime. And even if he would, we wouldn't take it. All right, here's today's show. Tonight, the CBC gives a platform to a bizarre anti-farm activist. You're watching the Ezra Levant Show.
Shame on you, you censorious bug.
I saw this great comment by Mark Andreessen the other day. He's the high-tech startup investor. He said, everything you read makes sense if you simply translate experts as crazy people. I really think that works, though. I mean, try it on global warming, on COVID stuff, on mass immigration, on whatever. Just swap in crazy people where it reads experts. By the way, Andreessen himself actually is an expert in so many things. He was the inventor of the first graphical internet web browser called Mosaic. For those of you my age or older, you might remember that. But you see, the point he's making is that there's a difference between being a real expert at something, like a technical expertise, like designing a web browser like he did, or maybe being a carpenter who specializes in a particular kind of woodworking. Those are experts. And the way the phrase expert is used by the media and by politicians is a raw appeal to authority, not an appeal to actual expertise. As in, listen to this person in the white lab coat with the clipboard because you should obey this person and you should distrust your own instincts because they're an expert and you're not. An expert about things in which there are no real experts. It's all a matter of political opinions. Anyways, I thought about that line by Mark Andreessen because of this story by the government journalist at Trudeau's CBC state broadcaster over the weekend. The headline, experts say SaskRM's vote against climate change policies not rooted in fact. You see my point? What possible experts could there be about such a question? Climate change policies? That's another word for politics. There's no expert opinion about politics. We each get our own opinion about politics. We're each experts about our own lives. But the CBC doesn't like that. They like to tell you what to think. No one would listen to them if they said, we think you're wrong. So they fake it and say, we found some experts who think you're wrong. But check out this guy who they call an expert in their story. Let me read a bit, okay? So here's the headline again. Experts say Saskatchewan regional municipalities vote against climate change policies not rooted in fact. Ag and climate change expert says farmers should be supported in climate change transition. Okay, so he's an agriculture and climate change expert. Wow, that's pretty good. That's a double expert. Okay, let's hear it. Representatives of Saskatchewan's rural municipalities, sorry, I called them regional municipalities, rural municipalities, voted overwhelmingly at a recent convention in favor of a resolution saying carbon dioxide isn't a pollutant and calling on the province to step away from climate change initiatives. I'm so glad to hear that, aren't you? I mean, carbon dioxide or CO2, it's naturally occurring. All life on Earth would die without it. We exhale it, as do all mammals. Plants use it for photosynthesis. Sunlight plus water plus CO2 equals energy for plants, which is how everything green grows. Imagine the insanity of declaring that carbon a basic element in the periodic table of the elements is somehow dangerous. I'm so glad to hear these local politicians are showing more backbone than 99% of politicians, even conservative politicians, who go along with the claim that carbon is somehow pollution. Anyways, back to the CBC story. Some experts who study agriculture and climate change say the resolution isn't rooted in fact and missed out on why farmers should want to address climate change. Okay, can I clarify? Is this expert an expert in climate change and agriculture, which is what they said? Or is he an expert in why farmers are thinking the wrong thoughts and should support Justin Trudeau? So they're two different things, aren't they? Okay, back to the story. The resolution on CO2 made at the annual meeting of the Saskatchewan Association of Rural Municipalities, SARM for short, in mid-March, says, quote, policies that vilify CO2 are illogical and unpredictable and will undoubtedly create an uncertain amount of negative impact for our existing crop production systems and economy. Be it resolved that SARM will ensure that any policies that unduly target naturally occurring CO2 will be deemed as illogical and dangerous. We move that Saskatchewan remove itself from any national or international agreements that reference net zero. Oh, I love these guys. Now, first of all, that's obviously true. It doesn't even mention the fact that Canada is just a sliver of the world's CO2 emissions to begin with. China emits pretty much as the rest of the world combined. And that's if you even care about carbon dioxide, i.e. plant food. I'm more worried about actual real pollution, of course. Does the CBC have an expert in that, perhaps? But here's where they introduce the expert and his expertise. Quote, the resolution is written with misleading, confused language about climate change and policy, said Darren Qualman, Director of Climate Crisis Policy and Action with the National Farmers Union. What's that? He's a director of climate crisis policy and action? You stop me right there, mate. The word crisis is an opinion, a baseless opinion in my books, but it's an opinion. It's a political decision. It's a choice. It's not a scientifically measurable thing. Are we in a crisis? Or do we just have a problem? Or is it just a challenge? Or is it actually none of these things at all? The fact that his title is Climate Crisis Advisor tells you all you need to know, and he's in charge of action, which means he's made up his mind here. You know what you need to know about this guy. Well, actually, you don't know all you need to know. He's with the Socialist National Farmers Union. Of course, farmers don't really have unions. That's mainly a city thing. It's a socialist thing. It's a government thing. As in, the National Farmers Union are literally paid by Trudeau. I don't know if you know this, but there's this government website that's searchable for the grants they give out. You can search by recipient name. So here's the result for the National Farmers Union. Just type it right in. You can do it yourself. Go to open.canada.ca. There's 17 results for the National Farmers Union. Now, the first hit is for the National Farmers Union in Mozambique. That's in Africa. Bizarrely, Trudeau gave them $17.5 million tax dollars. Why are Canadian taxpayers giving $17.5 million to farmers in Mozambique? But the next hit is for That's My Farmer, stories from sustainable farms across Canada from the National Farmers Union. So Trudeau is paying for global warming stories from farmers, paying for propaganda. Global warming commentary paid for by the Liberal Party. These guys are bought and paid for lobbyists. Scroll down, more and more and more and more and more grants from Trudeau to this same group. Here's one for $83,000. Bringing young farmers together to take action on climate change. Oh, I got it. I'm pretty sure if you pay a farmer $83,000 to talk about global warming, he will, because he's not stupid. He'll take your money, but it won't be a real story. It's propaganda. Scroll down, grant after grant after grant. There's actually more than one page. Nothing to do with actual farming, to be clear. Everything to do with anti-farm propaganda, in fact. Why didn't the CBC mention that? Why did they call the National Farmers Union experts when they're paid spokesmen for Trudeau's global warming disinformation? Let me read a little bit more from the CBC story, quoting this expert. It talks about vilifying natural CO2, and of course, no one is vilifying that. And indeed, the whole focus on natural CO2 is a red herring. The CO2 that's causing the crisis problem isn't natural CO2, it's CO2 from human sources, Qualman said in an interview on CBC Saskatchewan's Blue Sky radio show. Huh? So there's natural CO2, and that's the good stuff. The problem is with CO2 from farmers. What on earth is he saying? This is an expert? He's paid by Trudeau to promote global warming hysteria. His very job title is hysterical. Okay, but even someone who is hysterical could say something true. It's possible. But what did he say? What was his expertise that caused the CBC to call him an expert? He says there's good carbon dioxide and there's bad carbon dioxide. The good kind is naturally occurring. The bad kind is from evil conservative farmers. I'm sorry, that is cuckoo. That is crazy. That is nuttier than a Snickers bar. That is a fraud. It's not an expert. That's a fibber. That's a maker-upper. CO2 is carbon dioxide. It's the same wherever it comes from. There is no farm expertise or climate expertise that says differently. This guy's lying. He's not an expert. And the CBC are lying for calling him an expert. Here's an actual expert in food production at Dalhousie University, Dr. Sylvain Charlebois. He's from the Agri-Food Analytics Lab at Dalhousie. And he wrote, in recent weeks, Many federally funded NGOs in Canada focused on food have received a letter from Environment and Climate Change Canada, led by Minister Guilbeault, asking the group to publicly endorse the carbon tax and rebates. Really? He says the government is pressuring people to come out in favor of the carbon tax. That is politics, not science, not expertise. Here's another comment from this actual expert. You see this chart that he published just the other day? It shows the cost of a healthy diet in Canada and that it's going up and up and up. That's inflation, right? You all know that. But look at the amount of money spent by the average Canadian on food. It's actually declining. That's that light green line. So the cost of food is going up. And on July 21st, that was the moment the average Canadian could not afford healthy food, that their income fell, their budget fell below what was needed for a healthy diet. Canadians are getting poorer. So much so that the average Canadian is not buying enough healthy food. It is not that they're not hungry anymore. It's that they're poor now. And Trudeau is jacking up the carbon tax on the farmers who drive the tractors to make the food and the trucks that bring that food to your supermarket. And you don't have to be an expert to see that. Stay with us for more. Oh, what are the odds that they chose April Fool's Day for the day they were going to jack up the carbon tax by 23%? I mean, I don't know, maybe April Fool's Day isn't a big thing for grown-up people. Maybe it's sort of a kid's fake holiday, but I always think of April 1st as April Fool's Day. What a day to choose for a tax hike. But I think they must have it in their mind because only someone engaged in tomfoolery would also on the same day give themselves a pay raise at taxpayers' expense. And that is exactly what Justin Trudeau and the rest of the MPs did on that same day, a double whammy, a tax increase on you, a pay increase for them. Well, Pierre Poilievre, I think, has wisely cottoned on to the tax increase as an important issue, not just for tax relief, but because I think the mood of the country has changed. And I know this because even liberal premiers from Atlantic Canada say enough is enough. Our people cannot bear this tax hike. Justin Trudeau, though, perhaps the most stubborn man in Canada, you know, his stubbornness has served him well. Never explain, never apologize. That works a lot of the time, but not when you've lost the people. And between Pierre Poilievre on the partisan side, between provincial premiers speaking out, between groups like the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, and I think the newly activated conservative populist grassroots, who had a tremendous success with the trucker convoy, I think that you had a perfect storm. And so it was on Monday. You might recall I hosted a live stream where we checked in across the country, city by city, on the grassroots protests against the tax hike. It was a lot of fun for me because it brought back great memories of peaceful protests from the lockdown era. And it was a pleasure to see our journalists, some of whom we recruited during the trucker convoy, deploying themselves to this as well. And today I want to zero in on perhaps the most interesting place for these peaceful protests on Monday. Protests that are actually continuing on. They were there yesterday and again today. I'm talking about one particular area just west of the city of Calgary. For those of you who know Calgary and who have ever driven out to the mountains, out to Canmore and then to Banff and Lake Louise and onwards, when you get out of the city, sort of the last stop where there's gas and, you know, place to pull over and whatnot before you really start getting into the country, that is where the people gathered with signs, with trucks, with farm equipment. Let me show a little bit of what it was like on Monday. But boy, it's got more exciting since then. Here's a flashback to Monday. Good, doesn't it? And as you can see, protesters narrowed the lanes, and you could see that the truckers didn't mind. People were honking support, and when an ambulance had to come by, they widened the lane, and then they narrowed it again. And it was all done with the approval and supervision of police. And I thought that's how it ought to be. Here, take a look at the narrowing, and then the widening, and then the narrowing when that ambulance went by. This was great. Take a look.
Okay, I guess,
moving it in.
Okay, you know what? Plans changed.
Moving it in.
Plans changed.
Moving it in. Be careful.
Well, I guess those images made some folks in Ottawa angry. And by some folks, I'm talking about the usual suspects. Justin Trudeau, Chrystia Freeland. I can't even remember who the public safety minister is these days. I mean, the justice minister who invoked the Emergencies Act, David Lametti, he resigned in disgrace. So I suppose it's Arif Virani, the justice minister. They saw this, and I'm sure they blew their stack. They thought, oh my God, the police are actually accommodating these protesters. And so it seems the order went out to the federal RCMP, because remember, in Alberta, they don't have a provincial police force. There's the Calgary police, there's the Edmonton police, there's Lethbridge police, there's city police, but in the countryside, it's Trudeau's police. The provincial government has a contract. They pay Trudeau for the pleasure and privilege of being ruled over by Trudeau's partisan cops. And joining me now to talk about what that has morphed into some ugliness is our friend Angelica Toy, who was on the scene and has been out there for several days. She's back in the city now. Angelica, great to see you again.
Hi, Ezra. Thank you.
Well, thank you for rushing out there, because I didn't think it would turn that exciting. Tell me a little bit about what it's like out there. First of all, I want to ask you in a minute what the police were like, but first tell me about the protesters. Who are they demographically, age-wise? Are they people who protest all the time downtown? Are like they the usual freedom-oriented suspects? Are these different people? Was it families? Who was there at the side of the road?
So to my surprise, there are actually very few of those regular protesters that you would see in the city of Calgary. There were a lot of new faces, but I think that's because a lot of people did convoy from Edmonton and Red Deer and other places to be at this protest. And there was also a lot of little kids. I think the youngest one was probably around 2 months old, was in a stroller. And then there were some elderly people. There was also a veteran. So there was a variety of people.
Now, what I saw looked great. I saw our colleague Adam Sos with some fellas who had a helicopter and they had some messages, axe the tax. And I thought, that is so much fun. That brings back memories of the trucker protest. Can you confirm for me that the conduct of the protesters was generally peaceful and, I'm not going to say 100% law-abiding because they moved the cones out into one lane of traffic, but they did so with the approval and cooperation of the RCMP. So other than narrowing the lane there for a while, was everything else on the up and up, would you say?
So at one point I was watching them advance the lane, like they were trying to take more of the lane there lengthwise. So they were kind of just doing it on their own accord. But other than that, yes, they were 100% peaceful. I didn't see any altercations between them and the people driving by. In fact, it was just a lot of love and support. Obviously you have the few folks there that, might be yelling at those who might be giving the middle fingers back, but there's also a lot of people telling them that they love them back. So it was just a mix of the both.
I saw you posted a tweet of someone driving back the one form of antipathy that I saw. There was a lot of sympathetic horn honking, but one person drove by with an axe, I think. Here, let's take a look at the video and you can tell us what happened. Here's what you caught. So I'm guessing that person didn't support them. I think it's hard to understand the meaning there. Is that what you took from that? That someone didn't like the protesters, so they sort of wielded an axe or something?
Oh yeah, I was on the other side of the ditch there at the during the protest, and I just heard this like swearing and screaming going on, and I look and I'm like running towards it to try to catch it on camera. And I see a guy with what looks like to be like an ice pick just banishing it outside of his window, like swearing at these protesters. And the people were in shock. Like, that is a lax thing you'd expect. It looked like this guy either came prepared, he was going out to the mountains to go mountain climbing, but that was surely scary.
You know what?
Scary.
It reminds me of the trucker convoy itself. The truckers themselves were very peaceful. It was the response to the truckers that was violent. Okay, now let me ask you, because I think that first, and I remember when I interviewed you on the live stream and I talked to your colleagues, Dreyan and Sheila and others around the country, I felt pretty positive about things. And the police, I'm going to use the word helpful. Like, I remember Alexa said that the police were clearing lanes on Wellington, which is right there next to Parliament Hill. And the police in Calgary looked pretty easy peasy too. But yesterday, and I think even again today, I feel like things changed. And you maybe heard my opening remarks that the RCMP, this wasn't Calgary police, I don't think, they showed up in riot gear. Here, let me show you some footage. I'm not sure if this is your footage. It's of the riot police assembling. So were you there for this change of tone? Did it feel like the police had a new mission? Did they say anything? Were you there when any of that went down?
So I'm going to actually take you back to the night before real quick. Around 7 p.m. Mountain Time, somebody was driving their brother to Cochrane. And as they were driving them there, they noticed that there was a huge line of what looked like to be Calgary police vans, around 20 of them, just lined up on a back road. So they immediately phoned the protesters back at the location on the highway and told them the situation. Somebody did have a pair of binoculars that they took a picture of these police vehicles. I will be posting that on my Twitter today. And then I ended up taking a drive down that road. They did end up leaving, but there was one vehicle that was left, and it was an undercover vehicle, and their back trunk was open, and it looked like they had a bunch of tactical gear in there. I'm not sure what it was for, but they also had a table set up and there was a walkie-talkie on it, so it may have been them just really trying to listen in on the protesters and gather as much information as possible. They were also kind of hiding behind like some trees, so They didn't want to be seen, that's for sure. So the next day, around 8 a.m., and I wasn't here for that. I came around just around noon, but same thing was happening. About 100 RCMP officers, tactical gear, crowd control weapons, helmets, all that stuff, rolled in, and they put themselves in between the highway and the protesters. This was to prevent the protesters from getting back on the highway and blocking it as they did the day previously. So every 45 minutes, they would do a switch out of the police. And it was very formal, like military style. So it was very intense. And I could see that the protesters were feeling very intimidated by that. And actually, one of the protesters ended up speaking to an RCMP officer after the fact. And she really voiced her concerns about the situation. And one officer did end up apologizing. And another thing I do want to note is when the RCMP officers left the scene, the tactical ones, it got way better. I could just see the atmosphere change because the protesters had finally let their guard down and it was even more peaceful. So I think them being there actually made the situation worse.
Well, you know, I learn a lot from Dr. James Lindsay. He studies communism, Maoism, wokeism. And he has this saying that it's not the other guy's action that's newsworthy. It's them, their attempt to provoke a reaction on our part. So if he were looking at this, he'd say it wasn't what the peaceful protesters were doing. It wasn't what the police were doing. It was what the police were trying to goad or trick or provoke the protesters to do, to take the bait, to do something crazy. And luckily, I think Canada's peaceful protesters for freedom are more disciplined than that. Anyhow, that's how James Lindsay might analyze it. But you managed to capture on film something that made me laugh. When these riot-geared cops were marching away, someone took a boombox and started playing a series of tunes that were so funny that included a marching song from Star Wars. And really naughty, contained one of, I think, Hitler's speeches in Germany. Let me just play it, because this is, in a way, it's silly and absurd. In a way, it's sort of sad, because that is what those cops were like. Anyhow, I'll let the viewers decide. Take a look at this video, which I'll admit it cracked me up. I mean, look, it's a tough one. Police have a tough job, but I think police have been politicized, and I don't want to make their political jobs any easier than necessary. I don't like it when police intimidate people, and I absolutely believe you when you say when the cops left, things became easier, freer, and more peaceful. I simply don't believe Albertans are violent people. I think this was Trudeau picking a fight. What do you think?
I definitely agree with you. It was so unnecessary. It was so unnecessary. There were about maybe 60 protesters left, and to have 100 police officers in riot gear to show up and act like they were, it was some kind of like serious military operation going on, like they were about to do something violent. Like when the officers actually had what may have been a tear gas gun. So it was such an overreaction.
Yeah. You know, I saw online some lady going cop to cop asking, will you say hello? Will you say anything? What's your name and badge number? They were also stony faced. I've been to London, and right in front of, there's those beef eaters with the big tall hats. And there's a lot of ceremonial guards in London. And part of their thing is they don't react at all. They don't say anything. They don't laugh at jokes. You wouldn't want to tickle them to see if you can make them laugh or anything, but they are stone-faced. But that's part of their ceremonial guards. They don't say a word. But when these cops are interacting with the public and they're wearing the most terrifying gear they have enormous weapons. Sometimes they're wearing masks or sunglasses, and they won't say a word. They won't say who they are. They won't say what they're doing. It's not the same thing. Those ceremonial guards at Buckingham Palace are silent, and we know what they're doing. They're just guarding the queen or the king. They're not to attack anybody. But these police, who do they think they are? Buckingham Palace guards? Who do they think they are? Let me show you this video I saw online of a woman going cop to cop and saying, "What's your name? Do you have anything to say? What's your badge number?" And just the contempt of these Trudeau cops was dripping off the camera. Take a look. Well, let me ask you, have you heard, are the protests still going today? Because that would be astonishing to me. I mean, I thought this would be a one-day thing, but we're on day three already. Are they still out there protesting?
Yep, you bet. They're still out there. I think they're planning on staying there until something changes. You know, many of them are very dedicated to the situation because they know that if they stop now, then they're not going to have any results. And I think a lot of the people there are very fed up. Some of them can't afford food, so they've got nothing to lose.
Well, that's very interesting. And with the weather getting warmer, it'll be easier to protest. I remember 2 years ago in Ottawa, it was minus 20. It was very challenging. So it's lovely springtime weather. Angelica, great to see you. Thanks for taking the time, and thanks for going out there and capturing such interesting footage.
Of course. Thank you, Ezra.
All right. There you have it, the latest from Calgary. Stay tuned. More ahead. Hey, welcome back. Your letters to me. Black Gold says, blocking the border was idiotic. You really only block citizens from using it. Also, there are extremists on both sides. So hopefully these individuals charged aren't that, but they may be. He's hoping it's a fair trial. Well, geez, I think you've taken a very negative view of them. I think these were men driven to desperation by a government that was burning a bonfire of our civil liberties, and the truckers were the final straw. Truckers, as I always say, are amongst the most solitary people. They're in their cab driving for hours. They don't interact with anyone. They sleep in their cab, many of them. And for them to be tagged with a requirement to get jabbed to continue to work was insane. And I think that the protests were peaceful. It was what we call civil disobedience. I wouldn't call that extreme at all. I don't know all the men who protested across the country. There were many thousands. I wasn't down there at the saloon in Coots, but we did have two reporters embedded there, and we did a whole documentary about it. But I've gotten to know a little bit the three men that are called the Coots Three. We did a sort of biographical documentary on them. I wouldn't call them extremists at all. They're family men. They're rooted in the community. They're about as normal as they get. They're the kind of guys that, you know, 80 years ago would have signed up to save the world in World War II, the greatest generation. They have that feeling to them. So I'm going to disagree with you. Frida Spider says, juries are different in Alberta. If they draw your number, and if you don't give a reason why you can't serve, you're a juror. And of course, you can give your reasons in advance. I had a reason the second time, but the selection wasn't called. That's my experience. They didn't ask any other questions. And it was as serious as this. We ended up sequestered for a few nights. Of course, this one will go on for months. Appreciate your sharing your experience. I don't think this is going to go on for months. I think it's a mischief trial. It's not like a murder trial. I really can't see it going on for more than a few weeks now. I know they've made Tamara Leach's trial a months-long extravaganza. I just don't think that's going to happen here. I could be wrong. I should tell you from sitting in the court that there was some preliminary vetting of the jurors, but I was there when one after the other they were called and asked questions. And the reason for that is the answer to the questions was listened to by the defense lawyers and the prosecutor, and either side had a chance to make an objection based on it. So it was very interesting. And there were a few who had been cleared up to that point, but said something that one side or the other didn't like. And then the judge had to make a decision. So they probably went through 30 to choose 14, 12 plus two spares, I guess. And I heard today that one person recused themselves because they didn't mention they had a relative who was a border guard and thought that would be relevant. Anyway, it's very interesting to see a jury selection. I actually have not seen that before in Canada. We'll have more reports for you at Coots3.com. As you know, we're crowdfunding the legal defense of the three men, as well as we're crowdfunding the costs of our reporter on the scene, Robert Krajcik, who's been down there since the beginning, and he's going to cover the end. All right, well, there's the show for today. Thanks for joining us. Until tomorrow, on behalf of all of us here at Rebel World Headquarters, to you at home, good night. Keep fighting for freedom.